KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Portland Eye Care, a Southeast Portland optometrist providing eye exams, contact lenses, medical eye care, and eyewear from independent designers. Portland Eye Care is located at 41st and Southeast Division Street in Portland and online at eyepdx.com. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Portland Eye Care, a Southeast Portland optometrist providing eye exams, contact lenses, medical eye care, and eyewear from independent designers. Portland Eye Care is located at 41st and Southeast Division Street in Portland and online at eyepdx.com.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Free Beginners Grill Ultimate Frisbee Clinics on Saturday, March 14th from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. and again in the evening from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. at Gabriel Park in Portland. These free clinics are geared towards girls in grades 3rd through 8th who have little to no experience with Frisbee. Clinics will be coached by volunteer women players and assisted by girls from local high school teams. Again, that's Free Beginner Girls Ultimate Frisbee Clinics on Saturday, March 14th from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. and again in the evening from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. at Gabriel Park, Southwest 45th Avenue and Vermont Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm at the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, here with co-host Rachel Haynes. Hey, Rachel.
Hey, Stephen.
We are broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. Both Rachel and I are public school teachers. We host every second Monday of the month, and we typically interview educators and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. And joining us today, we have two guests here in studio. We have Adam Bander. Hey, Adam.
Hey, Stephen.
And Rachel. And on the phone, we have Amy Fox. Hi, Amy.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us, you two. It was a busy weekend. I'm glad you were able to make the time to come back and talk some more this Monday. We will get to that in a bit. But first, would you just tell us where you teach, what you teach, and how long you've been teaching?
Let's start with Adam in the studio.
Sure. Yeah, I've been teaching for 13 years. I teach at Lincoln High School, and I teach math.
Great. And Amy?
And I teach at Cleveland High School. I just started teaching this year, coming back after taking some time off. I've taught a total of 10 years, so.
Okay. And would you each tell us what inspired you to become a teacher? We always like to hear that before we really get into our interviews.
I think I grew up kind of with really a fixed mindset about ideas around intelligence, actually. And I think when I started to kind of break some of those paradigms in my own mind, it allowed me to, I guess that led me to really think about education as a possible way to help young people also break some of those kind of fixed mindsets.
Yeah. Okay. And Amy?
I come from a family of educators. My mom was an educator for many years, my aunt, my great aunt. And I went into research. I was doing a neuroscience research and I was going on to that track. And I found myself enjoying the times that I was lecturing students so much more than the research side of things. And so I just started to teach at the college and junior college level. And then I enjoyed it so much. And then I ended up teaching at the high school level. So it wasn't exactly my first thing. I just discovered that I really enjoyed the interaction with with kids and seeing their light go on when they get a concept that they didn't get before, and just, I don't know. So that's how I ended up being a teacher.
Great. Well, thank you. So I'm going to set the stage a little bit here. So today we're going to be talking about what happened last weekend in the Oregon Education Association's PAC convention. This is our state educators union gathering to discuss and debate whether or not to endorse candidates at the national and state level. And this year, the positions we discussed were, of course, the President of the United States, one senator position, our House representatives in Congress, and then a number of state-level positions that are up for election this year. And I should also add that these endorsement decisions were made exclusively by the folks that were there in the room. There were about 300 or so educators who chose to attend the convention and donate at least $5 to the PAC. Also, in the interest of full transparency, I want to say that Rachel and I are Bernie supporters. We just want to put that out there. And we did what we could to reach out to other Bernie-supporting educators to encourage them to attend the convention. So now that that's out there, let's go ahead and dig in.
Yeah. So if both of you could talk about why you decided to participate in this year's OEA PAC convention, that'd be great.
I didn't really know much about it, and I actually heard about it from y'all. So I saw it as an opportunity to start to engage in the process of how the state union works, and also I am a Bernie supporter and wanted to be able to bring my voice to that and hopefully help to get an endorsement for Bernie Sanders.
And Amy?
So I heard about it through the Legislative Council of Portland Association of Teachers, as well as the Educational Caucus through the Democratic Socialists of America. And I have recently become involved with the Legislative Council of the Portland Association of Teachers, and I thought, I didn't realize that this was happening. And I love the fact that the Oregon Association or Education Association allows its members to come and to vote and participate, and it's live. It's typically done that the legislative council or body of a union makes these decisions for its members, and it happens behind closed doors. So it was kind of fun to be involved in something where it's actual democracy happening in front of you. It's fun. Did I answer the question?
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's great. Yes, you did. So let's talk now about the debate over the presidential endorsement. Both the Bernie and Biden campaign sent a surrogate to address the convention, and then debate ensued over whether or not to endorse Bernie, Biden, or no endorsement, so endorse no candidate. Amy, let's start with you. You gave a very impassioned plea for a Bernie endorsement. Could you talk a little bit about that, what you said, and what it was like to speak your truth at the convention?
Well, I responded to a person who stood up and gave an impassioned speech about why there should be no endorsement. And because Warren was no longer there, and they just didn't be a candidate that represented them on the stage, and that they just didn't feel like we should as a union endorse. And so I thought that it would be prudent to stand up and give an emotional plea for why it was time to endorse. And I started off by pointing out that we have two candidates before us. And even if they're not your candidates, there is one candidate that supports universal single-payer health care, Medicare for all, and one that doesn't. We've got one that supports the Green New Deal and the economy, and one that doesn't. And as educators, our job is, especially with our endorsements, to not only think about ourselves, but to think about the students that we serve. And in each and every Portland public school, the statistic is, and it's higher in some schools than others, that in a class of 30 students, at least two of those students are housing insecure, food insecure.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have an example from my school where outside of my house, well, a block away, I found out that the one of the coaches for our basketball team was living in his minivan with his wife because she had an emergency operation, and the surgery didn't go well, and it was very expensive, and the insurance didn't cover it. And as a result, they lost their home, went into tremendous debt, and declared bankruptcy, and of course can't get out from under the debt because of the new laws. And their son goes to the school, the school that I teach at, and he had to go live with his aunt to finish up school. And then there's another student at our school where the teachers were talking about who's going to foster this kid, because a similar incident has occurred, and his family lost their housing after a medical bankruptcy. And I said, if you are here to really serve the students, the children that you are representing here in Portland, and I know it's worse in the rural areas, then there's one candidate who, if elected, will be pushing for legislation to make it better and to change, to transform our healthcare system, and one that will continue maybe making slight alterations. And I feel that the time is for incrementalism is over at this point. It's small changes to our system aren't going to be helping the people who are desperate for full, I don't even know what the word would be, to stop someone from drowning. You need to take stronger measures than a floaty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and I'm so I spoke with a lot more energy on the floor that night than I am now. I'm just sharing the story again. So I hope that was enough. I know it doesn't make great radio.
Oh, it's extremely powerful story.
Great. Thank you, Amy.
And I also just want to point out that the examples you're giving are also people with very good employee health coverage, and this can still happen. So when we think about people who are underinsured or have no insurance at all, what happens when there's a medical crisis? We can only imagine how much more grave and desperate it can be. But thank you so much for sharing that.
Well, Adam, you also had a chance to address the convention. I think it was soon after Amy, when we were talking about endorsing a president. Talk about the main points that you wanted to make when you stood up and spoke, and also what happened afterwards.
Yeah, I think, so firstly, in retrospect, I don't think I, you know, did a particularly great job making those points. So in retrospect, I think I should have really let somebody who's maybe a little more prepared to speak instead. But
you're very humble, but you did a good job.
I'd like to say if I can maybe clarify those points now, or what I intended to try to hammer home, which was that there was also I was responding to someone who was speaking on behalf of the no endorsement, who was speaking in favor of no endorsement. I didn't quite catch it, but I think he identified himself as an NEA, someone coming from the national office. Is that correct?
No, he's a delegate that is on the board. But no, he works at community college, one of the community colleges here.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well he spoke on behalf of no endorsement, and the reasoning that he gave had something to do, where he said we need to do the calculus. And he said that calculus takes time, and that the math teachers know about this, and that got some, you know, chuckles in the room. And it occurred to me in that moment that the issue in the room wasn't really that people didn't understand that Bernie was the better candidate, but that there was some abstract sense of like political consequence hanging over them if they didn't support, you know, maybe the winner, maybe the person who they thought was going to win, and or, you know, that there might be somehow there would be negative consequences if Bernie was supported, even in the face of his being a clearly on the policies. It seemed to me that was the consensus in the room. I saw the strong reception that his surrogate received. Was it Hagopian is his last name?
Jesse Hagopian.
So it bothered me a little bit that he was using math teachers as a kind of rhetorical tool, since I didn't agree with his point. And so I thought, like, maybe as a math teacher I can stand up and this will be like a kind of a powerful rebuttal to what he's saying, and that, you know, his analogy to calculus didn't really fly with me. So I thought that, you know, I thought I could redirect the argument and basically say that and basically that his argument was saying, like, despite the facts before us that Bernie is better in terms of his policies, that there's just some things we don't, you know, understand, and that we should play it safe and not be too bold. And so what this did was it kind of conjured up an image for me of my students, kind of, as a math teacher, I see this a lot, a kind of fear of being wrong. And so it kind of creates this paralysis of action, mm-hmm. and of not having faith in their own reasoning. And I thought that maybe that's something that the other teachers in the room could like relate to, as like we've seen this as teachers, students who kind of can hold themselves back by having a fear. And so I thought I could connect those dots and say, you know, we need to really represent what it is that we want from our students, and that would be to really trust in our reasoning here, which is that Bernie really is the better candidate, and we should go with him. So that was what I was hoping to hammer home. I'm not sure that it was totally successful, but that was my
you
point
convinced
I wanted to make.
Me.
And then afterwards, there was a little something. Can you just tell us about what happened?
So someone came up to me, and I want to say it's the same individual that Amy is referring, she's referring to, right afterwards, and told me that she was really offended by what I said, essentially. So I didn't really know how to respond. I was a little bit nervous and anxious after having gotten up and talked in front of everyone, so I wasn't really like in a place to process what was happening. And I think, Stephen, you mentioned that there's people processing Elizabeth Warren dropping out of the race as well, and I think that's also something I didn't really have clear in my mind in that moment when I got up there. So that's what happened.
Yeah. Okay. Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Labor Radio. We are joined by teachers Adam Bander here in studio and Amy Fox on the telephone. So after the debate on the floor, we left the convention hall. We met with our locals in smaller rooms to decide how we wanted to vote. What were those discussions like? Amy, Adam, you're both in the same local. Rachel, you are too. What were the discussions like in your local?
I thought the discussion was... Amy, you want to take this one?
Well, there was one person who supported Biden and gave some good reasons, in my opinion. She, as a Black woman, who says that the Black voters don't trust Bernie. And so, but she was the only one, and there were other persons of color and other, like, Black voters in the room that didn't feel that way. But she spoke her truth. And then there were, we had, I don't remember the actual count, 22 were for Bernie, and then 11 were undecided or no endorsement.
Yeah, I think it was about 2 to 1.
Is that correct?
About right.
So it was a higher percentage of the room for Portland Association of Teachers that voted to endorse Bernie Sanders. There was a large number of in the room, in my opinion, that also were wanting to do no endorsement. And my analysis of this is a response to the pain of Elizabeth Warren dropping out very recently. It was only 2 days before our convention. Is that correct?
I think it was that Wednesday, the day after.
It was that Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And so I think that people are processing that, and especially women are processing what that means. When you have a candidate the caliber of Elizabeth Warren, who is so strong and very progressive, who gets such a small percentage of votes. And what does that mean about women in politics and women in this country being allowed to lead? And I think that for many, it was just a reminder that we have a misogynist in the White House and that women aren't allowed a place at the table. And I think that a lot of people who are Bernie Sanders supporters underestimate what that means. And I think a lesson for the listeners here on KABU who are Bernie Sanders supporters is to listen more and talk less, so that there can be a bridge, because there is far more in common with Warren supporters and Bernie Sanders supporters than there are with Bernie Sanders supporters and Joe Biden supporters. I'm going to say that again. There are more in common between Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren than there is with Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden supporters. So if there's anyone that you're ever going to bring onto the side, our time is very delicate, and it's now to really listen and hold space for the women especially, who were all in for Warren, and understand what it means for a woman of that caliber to get 15 delegates or 50 delegates total in such a small percentage of the vote, and what that means about women's status in this society. And I think that that's something that people don't take into account, and are pushing it aside and saying, well, now it's time that you just come on and support Bernie Sanders. Why don't you do that? And I think that the emotional processing needs to take place, because a lot of women in this country have experienced what I'm calling domestic terrorism, of sexual harassment, of assault, rape. And it's all to keep women in a state of trauma so that they don't rise to the top and they don't, they keep in their place. So I know that you probably didn't invite me on for this perspective, but it's something that I think is important to consider.
Absolutely.
I'll stop and let someone else have a turn.
We did invite you on to hear your perspective, and I think that was super valuable what you were just sharing about listening, because I have found that that is the case, unfortunately, is that there are Bernie supporters who are so excited about Bernie that it's hard for them to listen to anybody who isn't. And that's mm-hmm. a big mistake. And I felt like I was in a separate caucus room with my local and three other locals. And I don't know how much of it was because I was ready to listen, but I felt like it gave some space for some of those Warren supporters to jump in and give their votes to Bernie, even though they were still struggling with Warren being out of the race. So, I totally agree. Let's not underestimate the power of listening.
Mm-hmm.
So the The way an endorsement is earned is by getting 50% plus one vote. The vote for president went like this. 40% ended up going for Bernie, 8% for Biden, and 51% for no endorsement, which meant the no endorsement was the winning vote. How did you all feel when you saw those results? What were some of your thoughts then and now after having some time to reflect?
I guess, disappointed, but not so surprised. I think at Super Tuesday was a big hit to Bernie supporters, and I think that's the feel that I had was probably going to be the likely outcome, but I was still holding out hope.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I was going to ask you, Amy.
So I think it's a big warning. I find that we have a very divided nation that's not listening to each other. And I believe that this is a sign, because I know that Oregon's going to go for Bernie Sanders. It is what we will do. I don't see a lot of excitement around Joe Biden. And I find it interesting that the National Education Association at this time didn't make an endorsement, which I find it's disappointing, but it also is very telling about where everybody is at. And my perspective is a lot of this is manipulation of social media and everybody in their bubbles and not speaking to each other and not having real live conversations and really hearing each other. There's a lot of suppression of excitement around all of this. And it's exactly the same play that they did in Africa. It's the same play that they did in Indonesia with the manipulation of social media, where the progressive left side was left with a whole thing of that it was more patriotic to not vote. And that was the youth vote, saying that they just didn't vote so that they could get the basically the authoritarian elected. And it worked, and it's been working, and it's working really well in the United States. And when I talk to people, every liberal that I know is feeling depressed, and they're being affected by this. It's like a mood suppression. And half my family are Trump supporters. And, you know, I split my feed, so there's another personality that sees what's happening on the right side. So the Trump-loving, Rush Limbaugh-listening, whatever. And it's all hope and good things and cheery things, and it's all looking great. And they are so happy over there, feeling so unified. And I just watch all of this, and I think this entire country is being manipulated. When we talk about the election being manipulated, it's through this effort through social media. It's not ads. And it's how we share it, and it's how we talk to each other. And we have to figure out, we have no laws around this. And it's frightening, because I feel that at this point, if something doesn't happen, we will have four more years of Trump. It doesn't even matter, like, who we have as the nominee. And I know that that is kind of a bummer thing to say, but anyway, I think that this endorsement where we were at shows it, the lack of endorsement.
Yeah. I mean, I think I can see a lot of in the discussions on the floor in the caucus, and also with friends and family, the same kind of focus on fear. Fear that, you know, certain things are going to be used in the election campaigning that will hurt the candidate of their choice, or fear of things not being able to be moved through Congress, fears about down ballot races. I mean, a lot of fear based, a lot of conversation that's very much more emotional and less about policy. I mean, that's where I see a lot of people's indecision, not about like whose policies do I really believe in, who is the candidate that represents me. It's more about fear, which is a bummer way to end our show. But unfortunately, we have to end it. So thank you, Amy and Adam, for joining us on KBOO.
Yeah, thanks you.
Yeah, and for you. Speaking your truth, thanks. We really appreciate it. Thanks to our engineer. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. Thank you, Stephen. This is Rachel Haynes, and you've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 to catch another Labor Radio show.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Personnel Committee will meet on the second Monday of each month at 6 p.m.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Welcome to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. On February 27th, Partnership for Safety and Justice held its annual Lobby Day in Salem, Oregon. I met with my legislators about justice reinvestment funding for community-based mental health and drug addiction treatment. I also spoke with others about lobbying their legislators about criminal justice reform. I'm here with Andy Coe, Executive Director of Partnership for Safety and Justice, and we're here at the 2020 PSJ Lobby Day. Welcome, Andy.